We gather here on a springtime Sunday morning here in London, capital city of the United Kingdom, one of 196 countries in the world, part of a world population of 7.6 billion people, sharing our planet Earth home with billions of different species of other living beings, animals, plants, bacteria, fungi, and a new biological group that I only learnt the name of this week, protists. That's everything that won't fit into any of the other categories, like amoebas and algae, for example. So we're truly not alone, are we? Yet we are unique, each and every one of us bringing our own particular version of the human life story to this time and this place. So I welcome you, one and all, to Essex Church, the spiritual home of this gathered community of Kensington Unitarians. Ours is a community that celebrates diversity, that encourages independence of thought and supports us in being truly ourselves. Here we remind one another of our interdependence, that our journeys of life offer much more when travelled in the companionship of others. So I invite you to take a conscious breath now, a moment, and acknowledge our arrival here today, our choosing to spend time together, our yearning for times of reflection and calm, to ponder upon the living of our lives, to wrestle with the deep issues of our time, and to strengthen our sense of connectedness with something greater than just ourselves. Today's service explores and celebrates our relationship with the earth on which we live, and asks how we might live sustainably upon our planet, using a fair share of our planet's finite resources. So our chalice is lit in gratitude for our lives here on this earth. We light this flame, a beacon for progressive religious communities the world over, as a reminder that justice requires us to live more fairly, both for those that we share this world with now and for the generations yet to come. Author Terry Tempest Williams writes, "The eyes of the future are looking back at us, and they are praying for us to see beyond our own time. They are kneeling with clasped hands that we might act with restraint, leaving room for the life that is destined to come." Words by Terry Tempest Williams. Well, a couple of the youngsters from our children's group are poorly today, and actually I'm slightly relieved they're not here, because I have a lovely book to show them and I've left it upstairs in my flat. It's called If the World Were a Village. I don't know if you've seen it as a book, or I expect you'll come across it as a concept. It's written mainly for children, the book, but it's got really interesting information in it for all of us. Because what the authors did was to reduce the world population so that we better understand the neighbours that we share our planet with. So if we lived in a village, if our world were a village of 100 people, well, we'd personally recognise everybody, wouldn't we, if we met them in the street. And if the world were represented by those 100 people, here are some interesting things to know about us. In our village, over half of the villagers are under the age of 30. Every year, on average, one person dies and three babies are born. In the village, we haven't yet worked out how to share the food fairly. So even though there is actually enough for everyone, only 30 of us have enough to eat. 50 people are hungry quite a bit of the time, and a further 20 people are so severely malnourished that lack of food is making them ill. 75 of us have clean water, and the other 25 people spend much of the day collecting water, and even then it may be dangerously dirty. 60 of us, praise be, have clean toilets to use. But of course that means that the other 40 don't. And they don't have sewage disposal in their homes or even a public toilet to use. That means they get ill more often. Of the 88 villagers old enough to read, 71 can read at least a little, but 17 can't read at all. And more men than women are being educated. Just a few interesting statistics from If the World Were a Village. And both this and the reading we're now going to hear, they're both ways of just getting us to think about life in a different way, because it's so easy to just take everything for granted, isn't it? I'm going to keep thinking about those 40 people who don't have the toilets. Whilst we hear about the earth being just a few feet in diameter.
This is by the artist Joe Miller. He says if the earth were only a few feet in diameter, sort of, like this, and it was floating a few feet above Hyde Park, just a little way out there, people would come from everywhere to marvel at it. People would walk around marvelling at its big pools of water, its little pools, and the water flowing between. People would marvel at the bumps on it and the holes in it. They would marvel at the very thin layer of gas surrounding it and the water suspended in the gas. The people would marvel at all the creatures walking around the surface of the ball and at the creatures in the water. The people would declare it sacred, because it was the only one, and they would protect it so that it would not be hurt. The wall would be the greatest wonder known, and the people would come to pray to it, to be healed, to gain knowledge, and to know beauty, and to wonder how it could be. People would love it and defend it with their lives, because they would somehow know that their lives could be nothing without it. This is if the earth were only a few feet in diameter.
Thank you, Brian. What I'd not thought about was the fact if it was floating in Hyde Park, we'd have even more tourists to deal with, and that would cause serious issues. It brought it to life. And let's take some of those concepts and also those two Hungarian Unitarian little girls, Barbara and Vanessa, into our time of prayer and reflection, in which I ask the Divine Spirit of life and love to bless all children of the world this day, and to inspire us to create a fairer world for them to inhabit. May each and every child have someone who loves and cares for them. Someone who appreciates them for the unique being that they are. Someone who accepts them just as they are, so they can be truly themselves and have their unique gifts and talents appreciated and nurtured. May each and every child feel special and loved. Help us to make this a better world for children to inhabit. Encourage us to tackle the challenges of our time and to be people for whom everything is a miracle. May we never take the gift of life for granted. No, let's use it for the betterment of all, so that the next generation inherit a planet upon which life is truly sustainable. A planet which is loved and cherished. A human society based upon the just and right living for all of creation. For indeed, are we not part of the web of life itself? And in a short time of quiet now, I invite you to send your thoughts, your prayers to those in need this day, be that parts of yourself, those you know and love, those you find difficult, or communities in our wider world that you've heard of in the news. And may our world be a little kinder, a little more just, because of our presence, because of our care and our attention, this day and all days. Amen. There are some lovely worship materials available on the internet, connecting spirituality with environmental themes. So I thought you might enjoy this shared reading, which I'm going to suggest we read aloud together. It's from the United Nations Environmental Sabbath Program, and it touched me when I read it. It's on the on this yellow sheet. We join with the earth and with each other to bring new life to the land, to restore the waters, to refresh the air. We join with the earth and with each other to renew the forests, to care for the plants, to protect the creatures. We join with the earth and with each other to celebrate the seas, to rejoice in the sunlight, to sing the song of the stars. We join with the earth and with each other to recreate the human community, to promote justice and peace, to remember our children. We join with the earth and with each other. We join together as many and diverse expressions of one loving mystery for the healing of the earth and the renewal of all life. That image of the tree of life comes from the Jewish tradition, but it's actually found in many religious traditions, that sense of all life coming from one source. And I wanted to take that into a time of meditation now. So this is a time for us to turn inwards, maybe to put down anything that you don't want to hold in your hands, or hold on to whatever you do want to hold on to. Maybe take a conscious breath and just allow yourself to let go of it. Maybe be aware of your feet resting on the ground and the way that this floor is connecting us to the earth beneath our feet. And as we appreciate the cycle of our breathing, we can maybe take our awareness out to an awareness of the cycle of life itself, and to that sense of there being something shared in all of existence. We are created of the same building blocks, the same chemical elements. Some of us also like to think of a shared life force running through all of existence. Some are inspired by that image of us as creatures of stardust or creatures of the earth, of the air and the water. I invite you, as we enter a time of shared stillness together, if you wish, to focus on this idea of a shared life force that is running through all of existence, connecting us in an interdependent web of all life. Our time of shared silence will come to an end with a chime from our bell in a few minutes. Okay, sustainable living. Once that we've chosen the titles for our services here at Essex Church, I usually talk the topic over with friends to get a wider perspective than just my thinking. And when I mentioned sustainable living to my women's group yesterday, they all groaned and said they'd rather all personally stay in bed. And then we dug a bit deeper, and we discovered how guilty we all feel about environmental issues. We know how unfair this world is. We know we're the lucky ones, and we know that our lifestyles are not sustainable. Some years ago now, various methods of calculating what's known as our carbon footprint were devised. This was at the time when the reality of climate change caused by humanity's excessive production of carbon dioxide and was accepted by all but the most intransigent of climate change deniers. We now know that so-called greenhouse gases that are being released into the atmosphere surrounding our planet, like a cozy blanket round us, they're causing the Earth to warm up, but not in a good way. A carbon footprint is a measure of our activities and the impact that those activities have on the environment. The impact that an individual, one of us, or an organisation, like a church, or that a country is having. And some measures of carbon footprints calculate how many planets we'd need if everybody lived a similar lifestyle, behaved in a similar way. So when I measured my carbon footprint some years back, I was shocked to discover that if everybody lived like me, we'd need 3.7 planets to live on. Now, I did the calculation again late last night because I suddenly thought, I wonder if things have changed. And do you know what? I'm down to 2.6 planets. That is a big improvement, isn't it, everybody? But given that we still only have the one planet Earth, you can see the problem. Now, in truth, any scientist will tell you these are actually very difficult calculations to make accurately, but they do give you some sense of an idea what the issues are. So the reason that my footprint had gone down was that I've moved to renewable energy providers for gas and electricity in my flat, and we've done the same for the church fuel accounts too. And the flat that I live in here is better insulated than the house that I used to live in. So here's my challenge to you all, which is here on your yellow hymn sheet. I invite you to do the calculations for your carbon footprint this coming week. And if you come to church next week telling me that you have less impact on the planet than me, then you will receive a small, completely sustainable prize. And my challenge will be to find those completely sustainable prizes in the week ahead. We heard some of the statistics earlier on from the book, If the World Were a Village. Useful reminders, I think, of how fortunate we are compared to most of humanity. And again, on your hymn sheet, along with the carbon footprint challenge, is a question. And you might like to think about it now. If the world were a village of 100 people, how might you alter your way of life and behaviour? I know it's a just imagine sort of a question, but let's all just take a moment to think about it. If the world were a village of 100 people, how might we alter our way of life and behaviour? Asking ourselves this question, I think, really highlights the moral basis of sustainable living. Thinking of the world as a village of 100 people underlines the injustice of current ways of life. Could any of us really bear to live alongside 99 other people, most of whom were hungry and poorly housed and had no electricity or running water or flushing toilets, when we were going to meet them in the street every day and know their names? I really don't think many of us would put up for it long in a village of 100 people, would we? Because we'd be ashamed. We do something to make the situation better for others. So I wonder, and that was my reason for asking the question, what might you do? I wonder what aspects of injustice you'd want to focus on in that village, because we couldn't tackle everything, but we perhaps could do something. When I did this exercise of thinking how I'd change my way of life and behaviour, I realised that I would definitely want to share my food with other people, because there's something so hospitable about sharing food, isn't there? And it's something I think we're all drawn to. We would want to provide for others. I'd also want to work to ensure that everybody had clean drinking water and toilets, because I'm a bit obsessed about clean drinking water and toilets, and I think that would be actually possible to do. And what I'd also do is I'd work to ensure that everybody was literate, that everybody could read, because that's something that I know how to do and I think it would make a big difference. So that's the rest of my life's work mapped out, and I'll be interested to hear what you are drawn to. Because I know, like you, I'm grateful for my life. I don't want my good fortune to be at the expense of other people. I really would like to share more of what I have. I know we've spoken before of the work of Joanna Macy, a most inspiring environmental activist, who has really, I can't begin to describe the importance of her work. But I've been looking at a book that she's written alongside Chris Johnston recently, a book called Active Hope. And there, they take the idea that feeling gratitude is the first step to healing our pain. They write, When we come from gratitude, we become more present to the wonder of being alive in this amazing living world. The quote goes on, "Yet the very act of looking at what we love and value in our world brings with it then an awareness of the vast violation underway, the despoliation and the unravelling. So from gratitude," Macy writes, "we naturally flow to honouring our pain for the world." And for Joanna Macy in her work, it's very important that we acknowledge our sense of despair. Admitting, she writes, "the depths of our anguish, even to ourselves, takes us into culturally forbidden territory. From an early age, we had to pull ourselves together to cheer up or shut up. So we live in a world where it's not really okay to say how despairing we feel." And finally, they write, "by honouring our pain for the world, we break through the taboos that silence our distress. And when the activating sirens of inner alarm are no longer muffled or shut out, do you know, something gets switched on inside us." And Macy and Johnston describe that as our survival response. So not individual survival, everybody's, everything's survival. That's the end of the quote. This survival response that we need to activate can take us beyond the sometimes paralyzing effects of despair and powerlessness. It can encourage us all to acknowledge the pain of injustice, to acknowledge the fear that I certainly experience when I realize all that is difficult here on planet Earth. It can encourage us to acknowledge the despair that too often accompanies powerlessness. And hopefully, and this is really important to me now, and I cannot alone find any way forward with this, but hopefully it'll inspire us to find new economic models that don't depend on growth, forever seeking new markets for new products. Let's stop that now. And let's recognise that we do have some power to bring about change. We'll realise that it's possible for humanity to live sustainably here on our one planet Earth home. May it be so. Amen. So we are the fortunate inheritors of life itself. The generations that went before have passed their responsibilities on to us, and we can now choose to bequeath a world of hope and possibility to the generations that will follow us. So in the week ahead, let us consider our life choices and the effect we have on the lives of others, and may we choose to live for the greater good of all. Amen. Go well, and blessed be.